3.0 standard webinar. We're going to focus on how to publish, manage, and govern, discover, and reuse artifacts for electronic business, service-oriented architecture, and other applications. And again, welcome to the webinar. We appreciate very much your joining us today. And we've got a number of presenters. We'll have approximately 1 hour of presentation, which will include a short demo. And then we'll have a question and answer period, which will go for about 30 minutes. Here's a brief agenda. Jamie Clark, the Director of Standards Development at OASIS, is going to do a short welcome. I am Captain Reiniger, the Chair of the EBXML Registry Technical Committee, and I also work for the Boeing Company. I'll be giving you a very short introduction to EBXML, and then we'll move into the EBXML Registry Overview, which will be presented by Farouk Nanzi and Carl Matak, as you can see here on the agenda. Farouk will also be doing a short demonstration, and then we'll have the questions and answers. So, Jamie, do you want to go ahead with the welcome?
Absolutely. Next slide, please. And let's see, I just want to check for person coordination. Looks like Catherine's driving the slides for this morning.
Yes.
Okay, good. Hello there. This is the voice of Jamie Clark. I'm part of the professional staff for OASIS. I am its Director of Standards Development. We're absolutely delighted to assist in setting up these webinars, although we've also received a great deal of help also from our members, obviously members of the EBXML Registry Technical Committee, chaired by Catherine, as well as a couple of the people and companies who've been involved in helping with the standard, Sun Microsystems, who's been kind enough to sponsor the WebEx connection that allows you to slide, and Front Telecom, who's providing the conference brick facility. So thanks to everyone for the time and energy to put together. We're here to talk about a standard. Standards, of course, are ways to organize data that allow them to work for everybody. Ideally, they're open standards, and if they're open standards, everybody can use them and hopefully use them with other things the way that meet their own business and information needs. A lot of these standards are created cooperatively, and OASIS, the organization that I work for, is one of the largest consortia made up of members who come together to create standards for this. We're one of the biggest and oldest in this area. We're using XML. They're used for B2B information exchange. You've heard of EBXML. You've heard of EPI. You've heard of SAML. Quite a few emerging core methods for moving around intelligent, semantically aware, useful data from device to device in a vendor-neutral way, and a lot of them come from, I'm happy to say, from our organization. It's a very useful thing to have a number of methods that work together, as we'll see in a moment. Next slide, please.
Jamie, could you please remind people to mute their phones if they're not speaking? There's a lot of line noise.
Somebody is asking me to remind you of one thing, so I'll remind you of two things. The first thing is we're on an open conference line, so if you're somewhere noisy or you're capable of mute, please do turn off the mute feature on your or close the door or go walk away from the car engine so that we aren't hearing it. There's going to be quite a few people on this conference line. The other thing I want to mention to you, just as long as I've stopped for announcements, is that there is a chat channel. If you look at the WebEx device that Simon has provided for us today, there is a large screen, usually on a window caption shared application. That's where the slides are. But there's also another window that could be behind or near that, usually captioned WebEx Meeting Manager. And on that window, you can see, Catherine, it looks like I just lost the slides.
I just switched over to show people where you were at.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. There's what it looks like, and you can see in the lower right of that other window. Thanks, Catherine. That's where the chat box is, and if you have questions for us, if you put them there, then we can spool them, and that'll give us a chance to answer them during the Q&A session of the second half of the presentation, probably around the top of the next hour. Okay. Back to
Thank
slide.
You.
Thanks. Most of the work we do in standards organizations and most of the work we do at OASIS is cooperative efforts between the users and consumers and researchers who are applying their business and governmental needs to the standards arena on the one hand, and on the other hand, the providers, vendors, and industry organizations who are experts in the underlying methods. And we've over 1, and as Catherine will tell you in a minute, that project continues. Now, as opposed to 1999, we have, as you can see on this chart, 60 to 65 here with basically little dots for new projects, bigger dots for projects that have approved and output standards, and stars for the newer ones. But just to give you a feeling, there's quite a bit of activity at OASIS, as there are in a number of organizations, to define specific data standards to fill all the functions that are used from transport and messaging and finding services on the bottom through security functions in the middle and then up at the more logically oriented abstract top level, specific managers of ways to manage, constrain, and orchestrate transactions, and then ways to design data for specific situations and industry. There's a tremendous amount of work, and I want to emphasize that two things. One is that they, generally speaking, all work together. Even if I send you an email today, it has to get past my operating system, my computer, my network, my servers, the internet, and all of its complexity, and then all of your devices, and all the way through on the other side to your software client. The reason we can do that is because that email message consumes somewhere between 5 and 7 data standards, all the way from the character sets, the transports, the addressing, to SMTP, to the way it's pulled back down. A typical business application uses multiple standards in context. You'll see in Bruce's presentation some examples of where multiple standards were assembled together to do something of value. And that's a pretty typical application of the use of data standards. Here you can see on our little map where 6 of our projects that we now host that are related to EBXML address specific functions. There's this process at the top. There's some architectural coordination in the middle. The CPA standard, there's messaging transport and some related conformance work. And then down in the discovery quadrant, there's registry, which we're here to talk about today. And these things can be used separately or together, like most open standards. That's a virtue, and it makes it easier for people to adopt them as well. So we're delighted to be affiliated with the EBXML project and to have great volunteers, individuals, corporations, enterprises, and governments who do this work for us. And one of them, the EBXML Registry Technical Committee, is led by the absolutely wonderful Catherine Breininger, who I'm now going to introduce to you, both as chair of that committee, a senior representative for the Boeing company who's done a great deal to help contribute to standards in the area of rationalizing data and supply chains, and also just one heck of a nice person. So time for me to be quiet and introduce Catherine.
Oh, gosh, thank you, Jamie. I hope I live up to that glowing report. Okay, welcome everybody. As Jamie mentioned, I'm Catherine Breininger. I am the chair of the EBXMO Registry Technical Committee, and I'm also an employee at Boeing. I'm going to talk about EBXML in general and some of the things that happened to start it and where we're at now, and then Farouk will go from there with the presentation. As Jamie mentioned, EBXML started a number of years ago as a joint initiative between the United Nations Center for Trade Facilitation and Electronic Business and the OASIS organization, which is the Organization for the Advancement of Structured Information Standards. This began in 1999, and 18 months later, the initial initiative was completed with a number of deliverables, which were approved in May of 2001. That completed phase one of the initiative. Phase two was from 2001 to 2003, and during this phase, the 5 standards that were initially approved in 2001 moved on to version 2. We began to see more deployments of the various modules of the standards, of the EBXML standards, and continued implementation. Phase 3, which is where we're at now, 2003, and this has involved a number of enhancements to the standards, a number of technical notes, helping to explain how to implement the standards and promotion of the standards, as well as additional deployments of the standards in various regions, which we'll also hear a little bit more about. The service-oriented, the EBXML suite of standards also supports the service-oriented architecture. One of the important things to note is that these standards have been developed from user requirements and the user community who participate in the standards work in the technical committee. EBXML is also viewed as the next generation of EDI as organizations move more and more into an electronic world. using the new technologies that have become available in the last 5 years, mostly leveraging XML, or Extensible Markup Language, and related web technologies. EBXML was initially designed for business-to-business transactional reliability and enforceability for the transactions done electronically from one enterprise or one business to another, and has evolved slowly over the last 5 years to be more extensible and more flexible than initially designed. This modular suite of specifications enables enterprise to conduct their business over the internet and across geographic and international boundaries.
Catherine, could we ask for another call for people to mute their phones?
Okay. We have a request for people to please mute their phones, if possible. There are a large number of people on the call, so if you could please mute your phones. And during the presentation, if you have any questions, as Jenny mentioned earlier, please enter them in that chat log, and we will get to those in the last half hour of our time today. Thank you. The five modular parts of EBXML are listed here. The business process specification defines the business processes in assembling business transactions. Core component is with UN PFAC, and is also one of the ISO 15000 standards, four parts for that. And this provides common terms and methodologies of the elements that are needed for electronic business. Another module of EBXML is the collaboration protocol, profiles, and agreements. This is also at version 2.0. And this allows configurations and contracts between business partners or enterprise partners. The messaging services module allows for secure and reliable transport of electronic data and information from enterprise to enterprise. And the one that we're here to talk about primarily today is the registry and repository, which is making available those key electronic business artifacts and services that are needed to conduct business or to move information from one enterprise to another, not just in a business-to-business relationship. Our EBXML Registry Technical Committee membership is comprised of representatives from a number of users, communities, as well as vendor communities. As you can see from this list, we have quite a broad range of representation from industry, government, and some from education as well. We're very, very pleased with the input and with the diversity that these individuals bring to our Registry Technical Committee meetings, and encourage anybody at the end of the presentation, you'll see a slide with a link to our EBXML Registry Technical Committee homepage. And we encourage you to visit that site and look into joining and becoming members. Currently, the work that we're working on right now let me back up a moment. We've got two standards. One is the EBXML Registry Information Model, and the other standard is the EBXML Registry Services and Protocols Standard. These were both approved as version 2.0 in May of 2002, and then approved by the ISO community as parts 3 and 4 of ISO 15000, and that was in March of 2004. Most recently, our two standards have been approved as version 3.0 as OASIS standards. That occurred in May of 2005, and we're hoping at some point in the future the version 3.0s will also be moved on to ISO and approved there as well. Both Farouk and Carl will talk briefly about some of the ongoing and future work. Mostly we've been working on developing profiles for specific domains, and Carl and Farouk will talk a little bit more about that. We've been updating a number of our technical notes to reflect the version 3.0 enhancements in those notes that were written earlier. And we're also developing some conformance specifications so implementations can test the interoperability and the conformance of their registries. There are a number of vendor products that are available that utilize the EBXML registry standard. Sun Microsystems recently announced a vendor product, their product, and actually you might be seeing a little bit of that today. Infavio has an X-Registry product, which also uses the EBXML registry standard. Adobe Systems uses the standard embedded in some of their products. CheckMe, EBXML Soft, and the GoXML registry, just to name a few. And we hope to see more vendor products, including the EBXML registry standard in the future. There's been a couple of them this year, so probably we'll be seeing more of these in the near term. This is just a sampling of some of the EBXML. What this slide is showing is some of the breadth of coverage. We've got implementations and deployments in the government of Norway and Finland. There's the United Nations Feedback Information Content Management Group, which is using a registry for storing their core component artifacts. The government of France is involved in a trial project. There are a number of registry implementations in Korea. One of the better known ones is the Korean EBXML Central Registry and Repository. And the health organizations have also implemented a number of EBXML registries and projects related to health documentation. And the U.S. Department of Defense is also involved in doing pilots and projects with EBXML registry. So again, this is just a sampling of the many deployments that are out there, and these also we expect to see continuing to grow in the next few months even. With that, I'm going to pass this on to Farouk, who will give you an overview of the EBXML Registry 3.0. Farouk?
Hi, everyone. Give me 1 second to set up. So my name is Farooq Najmi. I'm from Sun Microsystems, and I need to switch the screen to be presenter. 1 second. Okay, just about there. Yes, we're just setting up. Okay, can you guys see my screen now? It should say overview. It's the agenda for this part.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So in this section, we're going to provide a high-level overview of the EBXML Registry 3.0 standard, starting with a description of what is EBXML Registry. We will define some use cases and go into some level of depth on that. Then we will talk about some of the key features, and then we'll see a brief demo of EBXML registry in action, and then we'll wrap up with a summary of key benefits, future directions, and overall summary. So I'll move on to the next slide, which is saying what is EBXML registry. So an EBXML registry is a key infrastructure service for enabling SOA governance. SOA deployments are becoming more complex with time, with many different types of service artifacts and intricate metadata that describes the attributes, the relationships, and policies that govern these artifacts. SOA deployments that started with a simple registry-only solution are now finding that they need an integrated repository to enforce organizational policies in order to accomplish SOA governance. Governance being defined as the ability to enforce organizational policies. They also need the integrated registry repository to be extensible to meet the specific needs of their SOA deployment. Now, an EBXML registry is more actually an integrated standards-based registry and repository. So the distinction between registry versus repository is as follows. The repository stores any type of digital content or artifacts, while the registry stores the metadata that describes the digital content in the repository. This content includes typically service artifacts such as WSDL, XML schema, BIPL, and policies, but it really could be much more. The metadata that describes it is completely extensible
and includes any type of taxonomies, classifications that use the taxonomies to classify artifacts, as well as the ability to describe any type of relationship between artifacts. Related artifacts and their metadata can be organized into files and folders using a familiar metaphor from most file systems that we all know. And next slide will be continuing describing the EBXML registry, with a little bit of a difference. Whereas the first slide was focusing on SOA governance and the registry's role in it, I should point out that an EBXML registry supports many other use cases besides that. It is in fact a general purpose information management system for securely managing all types of information artifacts. The information artifacts may be contained within a single registry, or it may be contained within a collection of registries that form a federation. The registry federation may even span enterprise boundaries. The services that are offered by the EBXML registry standard include publish, management, governance, and discovery of all types of artifacts, and includes automatic versioning of these artifacts as they evolve over time. Security features include maintaining a complete audit trail of all write operations to the registry, as well as fine-grained custom role-based access control, which determines who is authorized to perform what operations on what artifacts. The next slide is titled Use Cases. And the first use case I've touched on is SOA Registry Repository. And we'll be describing that in much more detail in subsequent slides. Basically, that is one of the use cases that we are seeing as a dominant use case today. We're also seeing use cases where the registry is being used as a web content management solution, because all content in the registry is accessible over the web via deterministic URLs. And in other deployments, the registry is being used for managing controlled vocabularies, which may be defined using XML schema or EBXML core components or other means, even ontologies, as we'll see later. We're also seeing uses of EBXML registry as a business process catalog. We're using EBXML registry for managing electronic forms. In fact, you will see some of that in the demo that we'll show. And the UN CFACT organization is spearheading the use case where EBXML registry is being used as a catalog for EBXML core components. In addition to these, we are seeing some vertical or domain-specific use cases. Domain, we see EBXML registry being used for electronic medical record management, and it's in fact being adopted by a healthcare consortium and standard called IHE XDS. In the geospatial vertical geological information systems, the consortium OpenGIS is building their specs on top of EBXML registry. And we are seeing new uses of EBXML registry for storing metadata in grid computing. So one of the primary use cases we mentioned was EBXML registry as a service-oriented architecture registry repository. So to explain what's the background context on that is where this slide fits in. As I mentioned, there is rising complexity in SOA deployments as deployments are maturing with the types of artifacts getting more sophisticated, intricate dependencies between these artifacts and relationships. The need for enforcing organizational policies in the management of these artifacts is referred to as governance, and is a important business use case these days. In order to support the need for governance, one needs a single point of contact, a single service which can be the interception point for enforcing these policies. And that is precisely the role that EBXML Registry is playing as the central service that enables SOA governance. Now the next slide is a pictorial slide that shows how a simple scenario of SOA governance might look like. In step one, a service provider during design phase does discovery in the registry for some abstract service interface definition and uses that interface definition in step two to actually provide an implementation for that interface as an actual service that somebody could use. In step three, they publish that a concrete service that somebody can actually invoke back into the registry, the endpoint information. And as soon as that's done, service administrators in step four can start defining policies that control the visibility, the access, various life cycle stages, such as, you know, whether it is approved for broad deployment. And then in step five, actual consumers of the service can perform a new discovery similar to step one, but this time they discover the service that they actually want to use, and then in step six they actually invoke that service. The next slide is titled Use Cases for SOA Registry Repository, and this is basically taking the SOA Registry Repository use case and building its sub use cases to illustrate some of the features of the registry. And these use cases, as we walk through them, keep in mind are equally applicable in other use cases besides SOA. So one of the important needs and use cases is to be able to do automatic validation of artifacts when they are published to the registry. This is really the key to governance. When I talk about validation, I'm not speaking to syntax validation. So let's say if you publish a WSDL, I'm not talking about simply doing syntax check, but actually enforcing policies such as saying that my organization only allows WSDL that is based on document style of SOAP. Service discovery and reuse is very important because that facilitates that minimizes rework and duplication of effort. More and more, we are seeing in SOA deployments that services are being reused to build more complex services, termed as composite services here. And the analogy I use here is it's like playing Lego with service artifacts and building larger services with smaller services. Of course, when you do that, you have to manage the intricate dependencies between the larger granularity services with their sub-services, so that if something changes about a sub-service, that dependency can be managed. We also need to worry about how to roll out these services in a SOA deployment in a controlled phased deployment, where initially it might be to the engineering group, then it might go to a pilot project, then it might go to broad deployment. And within each stage, there needs to be role-based access control to make sure that the service is only accessible to those that are authorized to see it. Over time, services evolve and versions of the services need to be maintained. And the registry supports all of these capabilities that we've talked about in this slide, including automatic versioning of artifacts that are published and changed over time. And when change occurs, that change needs to be notified to interested parties, and the registry's event notification feature allows that to happen. The next slide is titled Need for an Integrated SOA Registry Repository. And this makes the point that governance is enforced where the artifacts are stored. They're not enforced where the metadata is stored, but where the actual artifacts are stored. Therefore, a registry alone is not enough. You need a repository that works hand in hand in an integrated manner with the registry, where the repository stores the actual artifacts, the registry stores the metadata about the artifacts. And an integrated registry repository, the artifacts and their metadata is stored in a consistent way, conforming to organizational policies, and that's where the governance aspects play a role. And by design, since the very beginning, EBXML Registry has provided an integrated registry repository, and as far as I know, that is unique for our registry standard. The next slide is titled Federated Information Management, and this describes the feature of the EBXML registry standard that allows multiple registries to federate together to appear as a single virtual registry repository. And the purpose of that is to allow seamless information integration and sharing even across enterprise boundaries, and in the process allowing local autonomy over the data, but also providing secure access. And for secure access, EBXML registry relies on SAML, another OASIS standard, as the federated identity management standard that we leverage. The next slide describes adoption within governments. Catherine has touched on that earlier, but I wanted to mention, follow up the federated information management slide, because one of the biggest reasons governments and large entities are adopting our standard is because of its federation capabilities. Because the federation capabilities allow for individual jurisdictions, provinces, cities, towns, etc., to maintain their own store, but still provide a unified virtual federation of registry repositories to their consumers. Some of the governments include Finland. This has been covered, so in the interest of time, I'll move on. Canada is one that we will look at a little closer next. So this is a pilot project that is being done in Canada, in the government of Canada and Ontario. It's a proof of concept that has a vision of improving service quality to the Canadian people and businesses through cost-effective e-services at all jurisdictions and levels of government. And they plan to do this by harnessing the power of the various XML standards that OASIS and other organizations are coming up with. And in particular, they plan to they are leveraging in this pilot project as a key infrastructure, federated registry and repository based upon the EBXML. The next slide gives a pictorial view of their project, and on the far left side you see the businesses, the citizens and employees of various jurisdictions. The title is a bit misleading. It's not just Government of Canada, but Government of Ontario as well. So these consumers of the information are using applications such as the eContact application, which is a application designed to solve the problem where I know I need to find somebody in government to address my particular problem, but I don't know where to begin. So eContact application will allow them to search through all levels of government and find the right contacts for their particular issue. They're also looking into keeping track of information on births and deaths, information within the registry. And this registry federation in their project is termed the Pan-Canadian Registry. It's storing all kinds of metadata and content in its various individual registries, all seamlessly federated together. The next The next slide is demonstrating EBX epidemic management scenario that was demonstrated this was a demo, not reality. It was demonstrated at the XML conference a few years ago, where the EBXML registry standard worked with several other standards at OASIS and W3C. This demo showed that organizations such as emergency rooms, airports, etc., using web browsers, fed in information about particular outbreaks of, it could be the bird flu or some other epidemic, and the central registry at the Center for Disease Control in the U.S. received this data. It would then detect, based on algorithms, some pattern of an epidemic breakout. It would use the change notification mechanisms to inform the subscribers that there is an epidemic alert. And the subscribers could be hospitals that could even... So I'm going to skip a few slides to make up time, the ones that are self-explanatory. The profile slide is important. The current slide says profile implement business context. And the idea there is that our specs are extensible, and their extensibility, if used in an ad hoc way, can create interoperability problems, but if done the right way through profiles, can facilitate interoperability. So verticals and specific domains are defining profiles of using EBXML registry, and this list shows several. The web services profile, the WSRP remote portlets profile, which is one of the OASIS technical committees. I'll be showing some of the web services profile in the demo. We have the OpenGIS in the geospatial space profile, HL7 in healthcare, IHE cross-enterprise document sharing, again healthcare patient records, and EBXML core components profile being defined by UNCFACT ICG. I'll move on to the next slide, and in fact most of the features I'll be demonstrating, so let me just very quickly run through this slide. We've talked much about the we'll start with 12 o'clock and go clockwise. We've talked about the web services or SOA registry, so we'll skip that. There are many content management features in our standard. The important one is content validation and cataloging. Any type of content, whether it's WSDL, XML, schema, etc., our standard defines ways that a registry can be configured to automatically enforce business-specific validation rules when the content of that type is published. Cataloging is similar, where it actually converts the some parts of the content into metadata to facilitate custom queries that can be very specific to the type of content. And as I'll show you in the demo, we will see WSDL specific queries as an example of that. And of course, we have version control that is automatically maintains new versions of content when it's updated. And we have very strong ability to classify any type of content using taxonomies. We'll be seeing some more of that. And with that, I'll skip to the next slide. And in fact, skip this one. This is self-explanatory, as is this one. And we'll go to the demo. Give me just 1 second and we will switch to the demo. Okay, has painted, and if it is readable, it's a web browser showing a web-based user interface to the registry.
Yes.
Okay, and the font is okay, Catherine?
Yes, it is.
Sounds good. So what we're looking at here is the user interface for the Sun Service Registry product from my company. And it's the topology of the demo is that the actual registry is running on a server. In this case, it's on a laptop, and the client is running in a web browser. Actually, the you know, the application running within the web browser is also a server-based application. And what we're seeing on the left side of the screen is, on this side is the control panel that lets you decide what you plan to do, what actions you're doing. While on the right side, you do the you see the detailed result of your actions. And what we are looking at present on the left side is the search panel, where you can look at all types of discovery queries. Some of these queries are defined by the EBXML registry standard, and others are defined by profiles or by the Sun product. So we're right now looking at something called the basic query, and that's one that's defined by the standard, and it lets you choose lets you search by the type of object you're looking for, as well as name and description and classifications. And I have done a query that is searching for a type of object called ad hoc query, defined by the registry information model, which is the result of the query is being shown on the right hand window. And here's an interesting point that I want you to pay attention to. What you see as the research result on the right side are the queries supported by the system. But what you see on the left side, this button, is actually the pull down, where each item in the pull down is representing one of those queries. So it's basically the UI, the user interface, is data driven by the data in the registry. And when you pick one of these queries, the screen changes. This form changes automatically. This is an example of an eForms type application. So if I just pick a different query, WSDL discovery query, my session is timed out, so I have to do the search again. Bear with me 1 second. Okay, so you see that it says object type, name, description. If I search for a different type, let's say I do WSDL discovery query, now the form has repainted. This is all data driven. The registry knows that what type of parameters are stored for that parameterized query named WSDL discovery query, and the UI simply takes advantage of it. So if I do a WSDL discovery query, I can do a search by what namespace patterns the WSDL uses, and I could search for all OASIS. I need to make sure I type correctly. So I typed percent OASIS percent in the search field. I must not have typed that right. Yes, there is a typo. 1 second. It's very difficult to see. Hold on 1 second, because I'm projecting the screen. Okay, now how about just percent OA percent, so that I don't type wrong. There, so now we found WSDL content, and when I hit details, I see the details of that WSDL, and there are many details, but one of the details is something called slot, which describes extensible attributes of this particular object. And it's a bit hard to see, but here are all the namespaces that were used by within the WSDL on the right hand, bottom right hand side. And this information was actually extracted from the WSDL at the time it was published by the WSDL cataloging service. So this is an example of cataloging, and how that cataloged information is made use of inside the UI. Now, classification schemes or taxonomies play a major role. It's going to within the system. They're used for multiple purposes. One of the main purposes is to classify content, but let me show you a few other examples. It's going to take a little while to paint, but here is a particular taxonomy called object type. And so you see, what you're looking at here, right in this area, are all the different type of objects that this registry knows about. Some of them are defined by the spec, some of them are defined by profile. So for instance, the WSDL type object right here is defined by the web services profile. I just increased the font so you can see better. So WSDL is defined by the web services profile, WSRP is defined by the WSRP profile, and so on. And then there are other things that an individual deployment can add. And adding these new types is very, very easy using the GUI. Another use of it is defining relationships. And you notice this taxonomy called association type. And here we see all types of association. Let's look at affiliated with, which further has sub relationships, employee of and member of, etc. So you can see another use of taxonomies within our system, and I'll do one more because it's related to another feature of ours. By the way, those relationship types can be used to define any type of relationship between any two objects. Right here we see subject role, which is the taxonomy that can be used to create any type of roles. The standard defined administrator as predefined roles, but new roles can be added like engineer, manager, etc. Now, there are lots of features, but we lost quite a bit of time, so I'm going to wrap up. I'm just going to show you one very quick thing. The same registry is now being accessed via a tool that is not part of the Sun product. It's part of the FreeBXML registry open source project, visualizing that same WSDL and its relationships that are maintained in the registry graphically. The point here is that aren't standards wonderful? They let tools interoperate even though they're not from the same company. So with that, I will wrap up the demo and introduce Carl Mattox and I'll move the slide presentation in position for him. Let's see. Okay, so Carl, if you would please take over, and I will push the slides for you when you tell me to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Berg. Hopefully we don't have the musical background we had last time. I'm Carl Mattox. I'm Andrew, check me. Member of the TC, and I'm also representing MetLife, which is a large organization very interested in using standards produced by OASIS. And my role today is really to give you opportunity to think about what you've seen, start thinking about questions and perhaps suggestions that you could provide to us about where we should be looking next for the evolution of the registry specification. So I'm going to start looking at the new features and to some extent explain the rationale behind them. So HTTP protocol binding, I think we've just seen a very obvious reason why we would want to do that. That is, it's not just software agents that can leverage information about how web services have interfaces, but also people are very, very interested in knowing how, if you will, those definitions of the web services are relevant to their organization. We there's also been a strong focus on version control, as Brooke suggested. That's very key when not only do you have individual web services, but also composite services, where a number of web services are used together to support particular business capabilities. And perhaps whenever a new version of a web service or a composite is introduced, not all of the business capabilities want to migrate to the latest version at the same point in time. So managing controls and what the dependencies between services and artifacts, etc., is very key. Query enhancements, you just saw an example there of parameterized stored queries. We recognize that people do not want to be writing SQL queries, do not necessarily want to learn what the RIM is, in order to be able to navigate the information, the metadata and the data. So implying a native parameterized stored query was seen as a very useful device. Content management services, well, not only content cataloging, but also in a governance sense, ensuring that the content is valid, and clearly would be useful to have the content discovered. We believe that the registry specification provides the foundation for information that, I guess, needs to be broad enough, not only for planning design activities, that is how those composite services are built, but also should be granular enough for the continuing quality management of those services, tracking incidents and problems and possible changes to how those services work together. Clearly, cooperating registries has been a major need. We've heard that many, many times. And fundamentally, when organizations need to collaborate, then you usually do not start off with a single registry nor repository. People want to be able to bring them together, not just bringing the content together, but also apply queries across those federated information. And at some point, maybe they want to, say for business continuity purposes, replicate information from one location to another, and indeed even relocate it altogether to perhaps a backup site. So these are key reasons, if you will, of why we've focused on features like this. Event notification is very much something that many people expect nowadays. That is, when things change, they would like to know exactly what has changed. And that can be provided in a so-called publish and subscribe model, where you fundamentally say what you're interested in. Next slide, please. The connection of information across federated registers and repositories, and I have to say, that is not limited to EBXML registries. You can also link to UDDI registries. So if you will, when one organization has policies of how information is controlled, is accessed, is updated, and they would like to share that information with their business partners or perhaps even their customers, then the agreement of how that is done, the policies that are put in place as to who can access what, and indeed what kind of identity validation is required, is our key governance factors. And we've been very fortunate insofar as we've been able to leverage the two associated ways to specifications mentioned here. Brooke, also, I think you've all heard that registry has been designed to be extensible, right? Perhaps a couple of those things that you may not have thought of are that as you move into new domains, new types of information, perhaps you need new types of interaction. One of the things that we're already working on is support for geographic information systems and a capability, a request and response capability that would be very useful there is the ability to do so-called geometric spatial searching. That is, you define a space that you're interested in the longitude and latitude sense, and then facilitate the discovery in that way. And I think you've just seen an excellent example of the improved identifiers. One where at the HTTP level, or a fairly human-friendly URN, and when you looked at the WSDL, you saw all kinds of UIDs and UIDs and very complex, globally unique identifiers, which not many people want to have to carry around in their mind. So when you're perhaps thinking of building portals with portlets, human-friendly stuff is really quite useful. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to change tack slightly by focusing on the benefits and, if you will, the objectives of supporting those benefits, or that we are based on those benefits. So we believe it provides a standard way to manage information assets. You can think of that as being providing a standards-based approach to managing services that perhaps are provided by different software packages or different authors. We certainly believe that the being able to, for users to organize the relationships and how their content and metadata should be to be organized for their purposes is most useful, allows the information to be both appropriate and valuable to them. And in an SOA sense, if you're looking for guidelines how to use a register repository for SOA, and I would have you look at the business-centric methodology specification, which is also an OASIS output, and that tells you, if you will, how the different levels and layers of artifacts and objects can be brought together and stored and accessed by registry repository devices. Equally, whenever you're doing that kind of thing, it's useful to ensure that the content that is being stored in your registries and repositories, registered and then stored in your repositories, is the content that is useful, is meets your requirements. And one of I guess the most obvious examples of this is the IHE XDS specification produced by members of a number of professional societies in the medical world, and they basically said this is how you use a registry repository to share clinical documents, electronic health records, if you will, and as a group sharing this information, not only define what content goes in what folder, or electronic folder, if you will, that there is a single common vocabulary that they call an affinity domain. That is the kind of taxonomy that was demonstrated earlier, can be structured and shaped to, if you will, control how information is categorized. Organizing your own information in your own way, enforcing standards, are also very useful things when you would like your service or your information to become a trusted source of information. That is, the more accurate it is, the more current it is, the more concise it is, the more complete it is, then I think the more people will, we have found, more people have come to trust the information. Again, on the government side, when you go beyond simply registering a web service and look at more composite services, then the life cycle of those assets needs to be well understood and governed in a most appropriate manner. Next slide, please. I think, you just set an example of content discovery. We've already talked about leveraging SAML and XHTML. Fundamentally, what that means is what most people are looking for is a seamless method to, and a single sign-on to, a virtual repository of knowledge, and which fundamentally provides them with a single view of the information wherever it might sit. And the organization I represent today, MetLife, is very, very interested in that for doing portfolio management of IT assets. Other benefits are, as we've already mentioned, the ability to deliver particular information messages, alerts, if you will, to personnel who request them. And I guess we mean appropriate here being those people who have permissions is also very valuable when you're looking to employ best practice for service management. And there's another reference, another tie-in to the ITIL approach, which is becoming a British standard and I believe an international standard quite soon. Finally, the ability to integrate information across organizational boundaries is obviously key, whether you're thinking of doing B2B, government to citizen, business to consumer. These are essential tenets of being considered a world-class service organization. Next slide, please. Again, I'll change text slightly. Looking forward to where the TC is headed with the activities agreed to so far is we've definitely identified the need to support interoperability testing. And what we mean by that is when developers are creating products based on the specification, we'd like to be able to allow them to demonstrate that they can work together in an approved manner. Equally, we're looking to provide a test bed, if you will, a test suite that will allow people to confirm in a very overt manner that they are conforming to the specification one way or another. Content management is a very exciting area for us. Basically, what we're doing is we're looking to build on the foundation of classifying information as leveraged taxonomies towards more complex structures such as those found in ontologies. And we are actively looking to create a profile of how register repository can be used to support the application of the OWL-based ontologies. Clearly, there are other means of defining content. Dublin Core is a very obvious one. We'd like to be able to allow people to leverage that. And as technology improves, we will look to facilitating more protocol binding. Basically, we believe all of these are essential, not just for content management in general, but when you look at particular domains, let's say electronic health records, where people want to share information not just between organizations, but between individuals, that there will be some need to facilitate the semantic conversion, mediation of different types of content, such as converting the raw data found in electronic health records to terms that patients themselves can understand. So those are the things that we're thinking about today. Catherine advised earlier that we are a very grassroots type community. Our direction is set by the members, and we do encourage you to share with us any thoughts as to what we should be looking at and what is significant to you today. Catherine, can you just summarize for us?
Yes, I can do that. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Next slide, please. In summary, the EBXML registry standard has been developed for secure, federated information management and exchange between entities or between enterprises. We have one registry standard that supports both the service-oriented architecture as well as electronic business use cases. As you've seen in the presentation, our extensibility enables domain-specific profiles to be developed for the registry capabilities. And we'll talk about where some of those profiles are available in a minute. As you saw in the presentation as well, the EBXML registry is being deployed in a number of different applications and in a number of different domains across the globe by organizations, governments, and industries. Farouk, would you go to the next slide, please? Here are the links to the OASIS EBXML Registry Technical Committee. Again, we encourage you to visit that site and sign up as members. The standards that we have developed, they're version 3.0 OASIS approved standards, are the EBXML Registry Information Model and the Registry Services and Protocols. Both of those are available from this site as well. We have a comments list that you can send your feedback to. There are a number of articles that we've listed here, as well as a page which includes a number of other links related to EBXML Registry. I wanted to remind you that the chat box is available for your questions. And thank you, Carl and Brooke. We're going to go ahead with the question and answer period now. One of the questions that came up several times has been related to the availability of the presentation or the audio or a replay. And I'd like to answer yes, we are planning to make this available, both the presentation and we have plans to make the audio available as well. Bruce, can you leave it on the other screen, please, with the link? And it will be available from our technical committee homepage. Thank you. The link is there, as you can see, and we'll be posting that prominently on the homepage so you can access the presentation and the audio. And again, we apologize for the difficulties we had mid-screen there. A number of questions came up during the talk, and I'm going to address them in the order in which they arrived. The first one was, how does EBXML registry differ from a UDDI registry? And what we see these as are UDDI registry, one of the major ones being that EBXML registry includes a repository portion where the artifacts are actually stored. We see these two standards as coexisting and encourage user communities to look at their requirements and their business needs and then look at the standards, determine what is the most appropriate one for their business needs and for their requirements. It's developed to address different needs, and we see this continuing. We also see a number of products being developed, vendor products developed, that include both standards within those products, the EBXML registry as well as UDDI. We also see products coming out now that have APIs to allow these to interact together or to query one another. Last night when we had our first session, Jamie also spoke briefly on this topic. So Jamie, if you're still available, would you like to say a couple words? Okay. Perhaps Jamie's on mute or not available right now. One of the other questions that came up was, how can we find the RIM profiles that are listed on the slide? Those will be available at our OASIS Technical Committee homepage. Again, that's http://www.oasis-open.org, committee's regrep. And you can go to that site, click on the documents link on the far right side, and you'll see a list of all of our documents that are available. And the profiles that have been completed are included in that. We also have some that are in work, as was mentioned at the presentation. The next question is related to the demo. So Farouk, possibly you would like to answer this. The question was, actually there are two parts of them. What is the use case for the demo? And the second part of that is a question about the user interface, and are there plans to develop a more user-friendly interface for the application that you were demoing? Do you want to answer that?
Sure. So the primary use case for the Sun Service Registry product is as a SOA registry repository. And as to the user friendliness, I assume you're talking about the fact that the spec is creeping out in the UI. And that is something we're working on. So terms such as registry object or extrinsic object, etc., are not translated. Actually, they're all translatable, and it may actually be a simple matter of terms. But of course, that's not the end of it. We will be getting feedback from our users as to the type of interaction changes they recommend. By the way, there's a lot more to the product that obviously I did not get a chance to show. if there are any follow-up questions, feel free to give me drop me an email.
Okay, thank you, Sarup. The next set of questions also is related somewhat. One is the EBXML Open Registry Project on SourceForge? And related to that is there an accessible online demo and or sandbox that can allow us to familiarize ourselves with the registry repository?
I'll take that one. The open source project that you're referring to is called FreeBXML Registry. It is at SourceForge. I lead that project. It is actually the foundation for Sun Service Registry. The relationship between Sun Service Registry and FreeBXML Registry is similar to Red Hat Linux and Linux, if you will. One is so there are value-added features. For instance, the Sun product has a UDDI interface that layers on top of the core EBXML registry engine for supporting customers that need that. And the second part of the question, can you remind me, Catherine?
Is there an accessible online demo sandbox?
Yes. So there is an online registry that is operated by someone in Europe. I can certainly provide the link on our website if the TC approves that. Sun has plans to operate a test registry as well. I've been the single point of failure on that one, just being too busy to set it up. But we do have at least one or two that I know of that are available for anybody to play with and even register and do publish operations.
Okay, thank you. The next question is, with regards to the WSDL files, are those actually stored in the repository, or are WSDL files handled the same way as UDDI, where the provider maintains the WSDL?
Very good question. One of the key differentiators in the design center between UDDI and EBXML registry, as Catherine mentioned, is that we have a repository, which means that we have the option to store the WSDL in our repository. And as far as our standard goes, the demo I showed you could be done equally well whether the WSDL is stored externally or internally, but you will get much fewer features if the WSDL is stored externally, because you cannot do some of the important things like access control, etc., because the external content is beyond the reach of the registry repository and the standards that we define to govern them. So yes, you can publish a WSDL just like you can in UDDI, so that WSDL is in your website or even in OASIS website, but you can publish it as if it's a local file being stored in the repository, and the metadata, etc., will be stored in the registry part, no problem.
Okay, thank you, Farouk. Next question, does the EBRS, which is the Registry Services and Protocol Standard, define an API for plugging in cataloging services to be invoked by the registry when something is published?
Yes. The EBRS interface is doing exactly that. It provides a pluggable interface for invoking the correct and appropriate cataloging or validation service when a certain type of content is published. So the example that I showed, I actually didn't show you the publishing of the WSDL because it would have added more time. But if I publish the WSDL, whether it was WSDL sitting in a website like OASIS or on my local file system being stored in the repository, either way, that WSDL would be going through the registry's interfaces and would be supported.
Okay, thank you. Next question. Is a profile needed to store or search EBXML collaboration profiles and agreements in a registry in an interoperable or predictable way?
Could you repeat the question, Catherine?
Is a profile needed to store or search the EBXML CPPA in a registry?
The profile is only there to facilitate, to make sure that certain standard content and configuration exists in the registry. However, there's nothing preventing, even in the absence of a CPPA profile, by the way, I've been really wanting to have the CPPA committee define such a profile, but even in the absence of such a profile, if an organization wishes to manage CPPAs, they can simply create a CPP object and a CPA object under the object type hierarchy, and they can publish CPPs and CPAs just fine to the registry, even without a profile existing. Where they will run into problems is if their partner also defined something, but they defined different classifications, etc., different things that you could do with the CPP, different cataloging rules, then they don't interoperate. So the profile is only needed if you need to interoperate with other registries.
Okay, thank you. Next question, how are content validation rules expressed?
Is it okay if I take that? Or Carl, did you want to answer? Okay, so content validation rules can be expressed any way the validation service wishes. In other words, we as a standard do not prescribe the syntax or we only specify the interface for up to the provider of the validation service to implement it. However, we are aware that declarative syntax for specifying validation rules would be quite useful. And one of the things in our futures list is to look at such a syntax.
Okay, thank you. The next question. How will EBXML actually manage access to the WSDL file? Oh, okay. So EBXML will actually manage access to the WSDL file. If so, what version of SAML is supported? There's another part to this, so I'll add that after this is answered.
The specs define a profile of SAML 2.0 standard. So in other words, SAML is extensible just like our standard is extensible. And just like we have profiles, SAML has profiles, and EBXML registry has defined a profile for how EBXML registry standard uses SAML, and that's based on SAML 2.0.
Okay. The second part of that question is, will it support other security capabilities such as XKMS, Kerberos, etc.?
It's an open question at present. We support, besides SAML, we support XACML, XACML, as access control expression syntax for our authorization policies. We are considering additional syntaxes and profiles to support in our standard. One of them could be in the policy area, but it's really a community-driven standard, as Catherine and Carl both pointed out. So we will prioritize our work based on concrete input that you provide us in our to help us make the right priorities in our development plans.
Okay, thank you, Farouk. The next question I'll answer, and if Jamie is online, I'd like him also to address it. The question has to do with the participation of other vendors such as IBM and Microsoft in the TC work. All of the OASIS technical committees are volunteer basis, so it is up to the individuals in an organization or in an industry or in a government to volunteer and be approved by their management and by their organization to participate in the technical committee. We encourage participation from any vendors, from any industry organizations, from any government or educational organizations, as Jamie pointed out in his earlier slide where you saw the percentage of participations of these various domains. So we are open to any participation again by any vendors, organizations, agencies, or institutions, and we look forward to that participation. It brings diversity and fresh ideas to any TC work and is highly encouraged. Also, we have the comments available, and on the slide you can see the link to the comments, so that even if somebody is not a member of a particular TC, they can still participate through comments and sending those in, and we address those as they come in. Jamie, are you on the line?
Catherine, I had a... Go ahead.
Jamie is on. Okay, go ahead, Jamie.
I apologize, but you're going to have to reset it up for me if you want me to do that. My apologies.
Okay, the question had to do, go back, about, the question was about participation of other industry vendors such as IBM and Microsoft in the Registry Technical Committee and other committees.
Oh, every one of these projects essentially has its own committee, and so we always encourage and permit vendors to join any committee they want to, but they're not required to, and you'll have a different group of vendors that support any given project. Now, one of the things that happens in the standards process that people should be aware of watching it, particularly from the outside, is that sometimes because of rules and sometimes because of other things having to do with market perceptions and legal and competition issues, vendors particularly who watch their intellectual property very carefully are concerned that if they join a committee that will create an obligation for them not just to participate, but also to license whatever technology they have. If you, as a corporate software company, come into a group, then it's generally expected that you're part of the project, and it's often either prohibited by the rules or just very difficult for you with customers or regulators to then compete with it or to withhold things that you have that are private. So in any given project like this, companies may choose to sit out if they have something that they want to do, either because they have a private product that is competing, or if they have some other sorts of plan that makes them not want to share their intellectual property. So we don't ever really take it as a good or a bad thing that a company is a member of our one of our committees. We know, for example, that although Microsoft has some plans around some other technologies, they also have offered BizTalk and .NET EBXML adapters when clients have asked for it. Generally speaking, the major software company vendors who we know, not just in the U.S., but across the globe, if a large enough client comes to them and wants them to do something using a particular standard, they will happily do it, whether or not it's a committee that they are a member of or a committee that they lead. I think probably the point should be made, Catherine, that there is there are a number of connections and comparisons made between UDDI, the specification, and the registry specification. Microsoft and IBM, since you named them, were both very active in starting the UDDI project, and at the early days, it was thought to be somehow competitive with or substitutable for the registry. But as you heard from some of the earlier conversation here, and also in the chat box, if you've been watching the conversation going on there, it's proven to be the case that they, generally speaking, don't do the same thing and are just two specifications that serve as different methods or windows into a database organized system and how you get information in and out of that on an SOA basis. And they don't seem to compete or conflict much in real-world applications. If that was responsive, Catherine, great. If not, then I guess I need to refocus the question.
Jimmy, can I?
That's fine. Thank you. I've got two more questions, and we're beginning to run out of time. The next question is, can the registry include and use user-defined processes and workflow for the actual registration of artifacts? Or is the process of artifact registration built into the registry functionalities?
I can take that one. I just wanted to mention on the last question very quickly that I know that IBM may not be participating in the technical committee, but they're building a product based on FreeBXML registry product for the IHE XDS that we talked about in the healthcare domain. On this question, our standard is very, very generic and extensible, as has been said before. We can take any type of artifacts that's submitted, and even those interfaces that we support are extensible. In terms to So you can publish business processes, you can even publish implementations of business processes, but in order to have a really meaningful solution to that, there needs to be a real profile that describes exactly how to make use of all the extensibility features for a particular scenario. That particular scenario has to be specific, whether it is EBXML business process or BIPL or what have you.
Thank you, Sarup. I have one more question on the chat. If there are any more, please type them in immediately because it looks like we're wrapping up. Does the validation interface apply only to the repository part, or can registry metadata also be validated?
Both.
Go ahead. There's a second part to this, so go ahead on that, and then I'll ask the second part.
So the answer is it validates both metadata and content.
Okay, thank you. Second part of that question, is there an equivalent to the UGDI checked taxonomies and an external validation service that can be used to approve the categorization of something published to the registry? Not the repository, but to the registry.
Yeah, I'll take that one because it's near and dear to me. Actually, it's quite a miss. We have the state of the art when it comes to taxonomies and their representation, because we store not just the name of the taxonomy and the ID, but its entire structure, every value in it, its relationship to other values. We can store taxonomies without any of that information as well, like UDDI does. That's called external taxonomies. We support that use case. But the design center is that a taxonomy has all the information, so you can use inheritance-based searches and so on. Unlike UDDI, we don't need an external validation service. We have that built in as part of the standard, and it's completely user extensible. In fact, in my demo, I could have created a new taxonomy on the fly, classified something with that taxonomy, and if somebody specified a classification using that taxonomy that had an invalid value, taxonomy validation would be done automatically with no external, there's no distinct, every taxonomy is a checked taxonomy. There is no unchecked taxonomy unless it's a external taxonomy, which is the UDDI-ish model that we do support.
Okay, thank you, Farouk. I don't see any more questions coming in, so I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, everyone, for participating. I'm going to ask each of the presenters, do you have any further comments you'd like to make? I'll start with Carl. Do you have any other comments you'd like to make?
No, other than thanking everyone
okay.
for attending, and we look forward to your future suggestions and comments.
Okay, thank you. Farouk, any last-minute comments?
No, just my thanks. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Jamie, do you have any last comments you'd like to make?
I think I might, Catherine. Thanks. Obviously, also on behalf of OASIS, thank you to everybody for attending, especially to our presenters, Carl Maddox, Farouk Najmi, and the committee chair for this effort, Catherine Breininger. But I did want to sort of go back and make a point that concerns me. We get a lot of questions about, who is using this so far, which vendors favor it, which vendors don't, which implementations have occurred. And the thing I want to warn people about in that space is that it's in an open standards process, it's often the case that you don't find out who's really using something until it's been around for a while and is stable. EBXML registry is that the registry particularly and EBXML methods generally have been out there now since 2001, although they've been versioned and improved over time. There's a V2 for most, there's a V3 for the registry and repository work. Nevertheless, having been out for several years with mature users, a lot of feedback, and a great deal of experimentation, we have a number of governments and private users who've proven to themselves that they can make use of it. I strongly suggest that people who are seeking to understand this space don't think of these methods in terms of which piece is currently the subject of the most press releases or the most interest from analysts who get paid to recommend something, because that tells you what somebody is spending marketing money on now, which may be interesting. But what's actually much more important is who is committed to implement something, who has built it into their software. Where can you go today, whether it's into open source software or into commercial software, or whether you can go look at exemplars where actual implementers have tried something and using it and it's in production. What do you see today in terms of concrete evidence that suggests that something actually works and has found a business use case that's of value? That's harder information to get because you have to sort of get under the press releases and the product announcements and find out who's actually using things, and that's a much more difficult inquiry. But it's worth making because even as the originators of these standards, we find that when we create things, sometimes their sweet spot, the place that they're actually used, turns out to be broader or narrower or different than we thought it would be. And the real important question is who's using it. So I want to encourage people to keep that in mind as they look at this space. Happily, at least with the EDXML project, what we found now, 4 years after the release of the first phase ones, is that it has matured and that users are finding very good uses for it, and that it seems to have generally fulfilled the intent we had way back in 1999 when a bunch of us started working in this area. Thank you again to everybody for participating and to our presenters for providing a lot of great information today.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you again, everyone, and we appreciate your participation and hanging in there with us through our technical difficulties. Again, the presentations will be available on our homepage, and we look forward to hearing from some of you and possibly having some new members from this experience with the webinar. Thank you again, and have a good day.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.